Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As soon as I give myself a label, I accept the disadvantages that come with that. And I just don't. If I accept disadvantages, then again, like in the rays of life, then I'm accepting that I start further back. I never did that.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. My guest today is wicked sharp, high integrity, and no stranger to hard work. In fact, I'd say those core ingredients have propelled her from humble childhood in Austria to rise to leadership roles in the male-dominated construction industry and to become founder and CEO of Trunk Tools, a hot startup disrupting that $13 trillion construction industry. But the hard truth is that lots of smart, hardworking, high-integrity people, especially those that come from disadvantaged or underrepresented backgrounds, hit walls created by others, but often themselves, and those walls sideline or derail their careers and impact. Dr. Sarah Buckner is not one to be sidelined, nor is she one to wait for magic to happen and get put in the game. She is firmly in the driver's seat. And who doesn't want that? So I've invited her to talk about two things, and for two reasons, right? One, her story is incredibly inspirational. And two, she embodies tremendous lessons about the additional factors, the additional ingredients beyond hard work that put you in the driver's seat of your career, of your causes, of making an impact. So we're going to dig into that in two ways. First, we're going to talk about her early career, some of the important things she did that I would say are, and these are my words, are almost instinctual. But then shift to later in her career as she gets to senior levels and now as CEO, where she has become even more strategic. That's a word she uses a lot in doing the things beyond hard work that increase success. And at that level, not just for herself, but for many others. Quick bio, Dr. Sarah Buckner started working in carpentry at age 12 to help her working class parents, then worked her way up into senior roles in the construction industry. At the same time, earning a master's in architectural engineering, PhD in civil engineering and data science, and then moving from Europe to the US for her MBA at Stanford Business School, where I got to know her as a fellow alumni. And out of Stanford, she founded Trunk Tools, where she serves as CEO of the AI platform. I love the short description here that lets builders build. And they just raised in August of 2024, a 20 million Series A. So they are off to the races. Dr. Sarah Buckner, big welcome to 97% Effective.
Thanks for having me.
So it would be my ambitious dream in this interview, Sarah, if you and I could jointly be what I would call like the Trunk Tools app that helps us parse a lot of your past, these kind of workflows, your career path, things that you've done, to distill those into some key gems that have propelled your success in the hopes, right, that the listeners out there can take some of those, adopt or adapt those to their situation to propel their own work and life. So that's the ambitious goal in our podcast.
I like how you tied it back to what the company's doing. Great job.
So to start us off, shoulda, coulda, woulda is the enemy of happiness, and stagnation is regression. Mm-hmm. These are front and center on your LinkedIn intro. Why'd you choose those phrases?
So those are translated from German phrases that I have followed and had like all my life in a way. So like they work better in German, but they kind of work in English. And I think that the first part at least is really like shoulda, woulda, coulda is the enemy of happiness, where I can't stand when people are like, oh, but I could, or I should have, or it's just like, if you want something, then shoulda, coulda, woulda doesn't exist. If you want something, then it is an I will, I am, I do, like whatever. And then you make your plan and you go after it. And when you get sidetracked, you just readjust the plan and you still go after it, but you don't readjust the goal. And so that's just very like, it's just ingrained in my personality. So if you just gave a keynote yesterday in front of hundreds of people about like excellence and so on, and people always want me to speak about my past. And I think people find it fascinating how you get from like being a carpenter on the countryside and like, you know, in a fairly poor environment to being an entrepreneur of a tech company. But that's not the path that you should be looking for. Like, I was not 12 years old and was like, hey, 20 years later, I'm going to raise tens of millions of dollars and I'm going to be like, whatever. I was like, hey, what if I'm not just a carpenter? What if I became a foreman? What if I became a superintendent, right? And so, like, I was looking at, like, the next few steps that seemed outside of the realm of what is possible, but just a little bit outside of it. And then I was going from A to B. And when I'm close to B, I'm like, actually, like, I will get to B. Like, that's ridiculously easy. Like, what does C look like, right? What does D look like? And so I've always had that. I remember it was impossible for me in the beginning to think that I would ever make a PhD. Like, nobody in my family went to college. And I remember when I was halfway through my PhD, I kind of knew I was going to make it. And so then I was like, cool, PhD done. Like, what's next? And so I think people forget that it's like, it's baby steps, but it's also that just forget about coulda, woulda, shoulda. Just like, you have to just do and execute on a plan that you set yourself. And then the stagnation is regression. Is that's more like, if you stop, you are actually going backwards. That's what I'm trying to say with this. And like, somebody came up with this fancy formulation of it, but like, whenever you stop, it's not just like, hey, you stop and you took a break, but while you stop, other people keep going. So the distance to your competition is actually becoming bigger, which means you're going backwards. Mm.
I didn't know those came from German. So the explanation there is really helpful. Podcast is going to focus here on kind of your personal path. We're not going to get into the business. I'm going to put in the show notes other episodes that really get into AI and construction, but I don't want to shortchange what you and the team have launched. And so congrats on the $20 million raise. To give us kind of the quick layman's version of what Trunk Tools does and why that matters.
Yeah, we're the leading AI, generative AI platform in the construction industry. Why is that relevant? Construction is a 10% of GDP, right? Like, so it's a massive industry, $30 trillion. It has a lot of data, but actually almost no way to deal or do anything with that data, because the data is super unstructured. And that has been a problem in construction forever. That was a problem while I did my PhD in like AI and data and construction. And now, given where the probabilistic models are in the world, that can change. And so, on the long story short, what are we doing? We take unstructured data in construction, we turn it into structured data sets, and then on that now structured database, we deploy so-called AI agents or also AI assistants. So long story short, we are augmenting and automating general contractors. Mm.
Okay. So if I take myself back to my project management and kind of GC days,
yes,
like 30% or felt like more of that, my time was to kind of like track down your version control, change orders, all this stuff, which would get lost. And among all these subcontractors, felt like a lot of my value was doing that. But yeah. I mean, it didn't feel like I could do a lot of my work because I was doing that. Budget implications, timeline was this critical path. So it basically kind of, I could say, pull those things together and it would pop up and help direct me and those I'm working with.
Yeah, at first it helps you understand those and then it takes actions on top, right? I think what we will see, not just in construction, but in every industry, is these AI agents actually taking over full workflows. And I don't think people actually understand what that's going to mean, right? But most of big chunks of bureaucracy nowadays can be automated by AI agents. And that's what we're doing for the industry. There's no reason why a human would compare as a middle with a specification. Like an AI can do that. There's no reason why a human has to write up a request for information. An AI can do that. And so we are going one workflow after the other and automating and augmenting that again for one and only one industry, because I personally mostly care about this one industry.
Yeah. Yeah. So let builders build. And then please go take it and address a bunch of stuff in the healthcare industry, which is where most of my background is as well.
There's many startups who are doing this. I will stay very far away from that. That is even more messy than construction.
What a big mess. Yeah. And varies very heavily by country as well. So let's dive in. I mentioned your early life and rise. I want to start with something that I've heard you say a lot, that you have this chip on your shoulder and that chip on your shoulder has enabled and propelled you. Share more about that, because I have heard you say that multiple times.
I mean, I personally think everybody has a chip on their shoulder. The question just is like, how big is it? And like, mine is massive. And and I'm very transparent about that. I think like most people actually have them. They're just not self-aware enough to actually be like, yeah, like I'm driven by some problems from my childhood or by some insecurities. Or like, I mean, if you look at any politician or leader out there, like I would say 99% of them are driven by some kind of like insecurities that are deeply rooted in their childhood. And I'm not saying that's a good thing to go after that, but I'm pretty okay with the balance of actually using this as a fuel and not just fighting against it. Why do I have a chip on my shoulder? I grew up in a really poor environment where I think up until my teenager years, all my clothes were coming from my older brother. It wasn't like we didn't have money to buy my own clothes. Most of the food came from the farm. It was a very rare occasion going to a grocery store. Like there was just like so many moments where money was consistently an issue. Money was something where like we just couldn't. Money was access. Money was freedom, and we didn't have that. And then even later on in my career, being a construction worker is something where people look down upon you, even though you make way more money than in most other jobs. And so then people later in my career look down because I worked in construction, and that's a dirty, unsexy industry. And then the more I came higher up in like management, I was like, oh, at least in Europe, my last name didn't mean I came from a Medon blue blood family or like something. So there's lots of that Europe is very much like matters. Your last name matters more than your IQ and your drive. Mm-hmm. At least early on in my career. So over and over again, I was told I cannot do something. That's why I'm here, because people my whole life told me you cannot do something. I started as a female carpenter at age 12. They were like, you are too young and you're a woman, you can't be a carpenter. A few years later, I was a waitress at Oktoberfest carrying like 72 pounds of beer, right? Like I was definitely strong enough to do all of these things. But over and over again, I started my PhD, and my PhD professor told me women just don't have enough stamina to finish an engineering PhD. Mm. Again, a few years later, I got my PhD. He's not a professor anymore, right? So there's always these stories in my life where somebody just stood up and was like, you can't do that. And the chip on my shoulder just fueled me to be like, let me prove you wrong, you freaking idiot.
And that goes to this point, right? You want to prove them wrong. You use that as fuel. But it's another thing I've heard you say, I think it's also very interesting with many of the clients I've worked with, is this idea of taking disadvantage, but turning that into an advantage. You said right at the outset, you know, girl, blonde haired, it goes into construction, and immediately you're, because of whether how people perceive you, you're put in a box or you're viewed as something that doesn't fit in that space. Talk about that idea of how you've turned disadvantage into advantage.
Yeah, actually, I even hate the being labeled like that. I hate labeling you will never hear myself say like, oh, I'm like a woman in tech, or I'm a minority, I'm an immigrant, whatever. Like, I hate these labels, because as soon, and America's doing a pretty bad job on that, right? Like, we love labels in this country. And as soon as I give myself a label, I accept the disadvantages that come with that. And I just don't. If I accept disadvantages, then again, like in the rays of life, then I'm accepting that I start further back. I never did that. I was like, okay, maybe I'm physically, as a carpenter, less strong than some of the men, but I might as well be way better manipulating every other person there because I actually have higher EQ than everybody else, right? So there's always, I was always focusing on like, what are the advantages that I have in my position? That is just a difference in psychology. Like, how do you look at something? It was the same thing when we were like fundraising, right? People were like, oh, I'm a female solo founder. And people were like, oh my God, like you cannot like raise as a female solo founder in Silicon Valley. It was a terrible time to raise as well. And I was like, okay. And on the other hand, people want to like wave around that they have invested in women, right? Like that is something that they want at least one of those investments so they can tell themselves that they're doing the right thing, right? So I was like, it will get me for sure the first meeting. I'm actually getting meetings easier because I'm a woman. Mm. I'm sure until this day that I'm on more panels and at more conferences because I'm a woman. So why don't I focus on that? Psychologically, it gives me more confidence, gives me more drive instead of focusing on like the 90% of the time that somebody's like, oh, but she's a woman. I'm like, okay, great.
So the fact that you almost don't see that, how do you manage that impression if someone perceives they're being put in a box? A practical tip, a way to think, or?
Yeah, I think it's a psychological thing. Just like, it depends. When you said like, oh, it seems like you don't see that. My answer is like, I don't look at it. Right? And you can decide yourself where you look at, right? I can go and like look at my life and be like, oh my God, like the cards that I got dealt with were really bad, like no money, nobody had no education, nothing. I was like, okay, but I can also look at it like my base level of from a risk perspective is really low because as long as I can consistently put food on my table and buy myself clothes, I've made it in life, right? So like it's a great huge advantage for me as an entrepreneur to be like, after the business goes, started this business, I didn't pay myself, right? But I can live off like no money because I'm used to that, right? So it's a huge advantage, right? And so I'm just trying to focus my view. That's my recommendation for everybody. You can decide what you want to look at. And I like to look at the bright side. Mm.
So it's where you focus and mindset. There's another aspect here, listening to your story and reading about it in our interviews. And knowing you, you have this, maybe you don't perceive it this way, this sheer boldness, right? You ask for things that you want. You have strong, crisp communication. Maybe that's been honed over time. That seems to count for a lot, right? To not just sit back and wait, but to go ask for things. Where's that come from? Or is that just natural? Or how did you hone it?
It's a very funny time to ask me that. Like I hear that a lot, right? And it comes very natural to me. What recently happened, I actually went back to the village I grew up in with my current partner, and he kind of watched, right? And he was like, okay, and he saw how I communicated with the people that I was surrounded with in this very like low educated environment, right? And he was like, the only way why I got out of there is was because I was very crisp and I just told people what to do so that they don't get into my way. And for me, I think like the first 10 years of my life, my career was just like getting people out of my way because all I wanted was get out of that situation. And so I think that's where it's actually coming from. I didn't have time to care about what they want or what they want to do. I was just like, get me out of poverty. Get me out of this. I grew up in a super abusive household. I was like, just get me out of the situation that is so unhealthy for me. And I think that's where it comes from. Mm. And I'm more struggling the other way because sometimes I feel like I should adjust it a little bit. Thankfully enough, now I'm in a position where that's just considered my style and it works really well.
To that point, did you moderate that in other environments?
I moderated while I was in like corporate structures towards like, you know, like playing corporate politics doesn't very much align with like crisp boldness. It aligns a little bit. So I for sure toned it down for a few years there in the entrepreneurial world. That works gloriously. Like that's how you raise capital. That's how you convince customers they need to buy your software. That's how you like lead with a clear in my like that's my leadership style. My leadership style is there's no bullshit. To even like be honest, our company culture, our cultural values as a company are low ego, high output, and no bullshit. These are our three, like that's it, right? And like it's actually very easy to create an organization following these three principles, and it has worked really well.
Mm. To go back to that phase of the corporate, because you did spend time in there, you were very adept, you were project manager, so you had to work with a lot of people, you worked with senior management, et cetera. I want to ask this question because it does come from quite a swath of my clients. And that is, you come in as an outsider, right? Or you're perceived in a certain way, let's say a woman or say a minority. You may get talked over, you'll get interrupted. You might not even get invited into the meetings where things are happening, where you probably should be. And so kind of in a direct, let's go back to your childhood, right? Like to call that out. But a lot of times when you do that, you get backlash. How did you manage that? Or how do you advise others to manage it?
A few things there. I would still be the person that would ask to be in the meeting. And if somebody interrupts me, depending on where they are in the hierarchy and how much I care about them, I would either tell them to not interrupt me very clearly, or I would go interrupt them back. So like I can play these power games, like no problem, right? And I will keep very much track of that. But how you get invited into the meetings or how you make yourself go into the meetings is really, it's a power game, right? So like you just have to be strategic about getting to a place of power and of leverage of where you can either ask for it and they have to invite you or where you get invited from the get-go. And so how I did this well in my corporate career was I had a phenomenal mentors. I was really good at finding mentors that were obviously higher up and that I would stay really close and I can't somehow convince them that they should be my mentors. And then I would ask them to get me into these meetings or I would ask them to get me to the next promotion and what I have to do to get there. And it would be very clear with my goals. Because I like to say that way, like the right mentors for anybody to find, they're always in their 50s or 60s. So there's this like, you know, in your 20s, you learn, in your 30s, you start building your careers, in your 40s, you're like elbows out. And in your 50s, you're finally at a place in your career where you want to give back. Right? This is a very, there's other people at outside of this, but it's a very easy way to think about it. So I would find these people, I would create a relationship of like, because they're usually bad of like father, daughter kind of situation where it was like, hey, like help me achieve what you have achieved and teach me how this is done and get me into your seat in the next few years. I would be very clear. Whenever anybody, any boss had asked me is like, where do you want to be in 5 years or where do you want to be in 10 years? I would always say either their job or even like a job went higher without a shame to just be very clear of like, my goal is not to play nice. My goal is to get my way. And that resonates with some people. Great, they're your best mentors ever. And it doesn't resonate with other people, but the other people are just blockers and you don't need blockers. You don't have time for that. Mm.
So it's really identifying them and convincing them. It sounds like you had a lot of them.
Yeah, and because I outgrew them, right? So like that's also something that happens. That you will outgrow them and then you need to choose the next one and the next one. And I would be nowhere in my life without these mentors, like throughout my life.
Right. Right. You mentioned that a lot of them were men, which is not surprising in the male-dominated construction industry. I am curious because I have a lot of clients who are women and they tend to say they have actually a lot of challenge with other women, actually more than men. And there is some research on this, but any particular view or experiences around that or how to navigate that?
Very little experience. Construction is, in management, I think 98% male. And I have very little experience. I'm trying to do this, like I'm trying to be a mentor for other women. I have an all female board right now, and that's a new experience for me. And I actually really like the sound of like being one of the fastest or the fastest growing construction tech startup, and we're an all female board. So there's like this, I'm playing with that dynamic now. I have very little experience.
I also wanted to ask you, there is all this research around warmth and competence. They're kind of viewed as like when you first show up and set that impression, there's actually contradictory research of, you know, if you're viewed too as warm, you're kind of a pushover, you don't know your stuff. And first impressions, because they're so durable over time. Is there a way that you see as most effective? Obviously, it's not one size fits all, but the way that you kind of lead, and sounds like you can flex, right? Because you've talked about different phases of your life and career.
Yeah, I think everybody can flex, right? I don't think there's a single person that can never be warm. I can flex, I adjust it a little bit, but mostly I don't care about people liking me per se, right? I care about people trusting me. And sometimes that trust comes with like, but also sometimes that trust just comes with competence. So I'm for sure somebody who like shows up with competence, and most of my career had to lead with competence because people question that more than can she be nice. Now it's interesting because I'm getting to a stage in my career where I have the credentials, have the CEO job and so on, where it's more, I don't need to necessarily prove competence. I need to more prove warmth. So I'm trying to figure out what are people questioning about me. I think I've proven competence mostly. So now, but again, if I go fundraising, there's zero warmth. If I go fundraising, like it's like intensity pure, because they're not going to measure my warmth, and they're not going to invest because they like me. They're going to invest because they think I'm going to kill it in the business, and I am. But then there's the other end when I'm trying to hire executives on the team, like there's a mix between competence and warmth. But if it's somebody that, like, if it's a mentee of mine, like they need me, they need to trust me and they need to like me and to like listen to what I have to say, right? So that's how I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really useful.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, executive coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
As we kind of transition to more senior levels and now as CEO, I want to ask this one question here because it's this kind of transitions that the proverbial, like, what got you here won't get you there. I don't totally by that, right? I've spoken about this, but there are some aspects of, you know, when you're the individual contributor, right? And then you move to a phase where you're just influencing and working through other people. If you think about the arc of your career to date, because transitions are always the spot that, you know, get a lot of hiccups. It's also where I got a lot of, you know, clients come for coaching. What would you say was your most challenging transition? And I know you're kind of massive learner adapter, you know, what helped you through that shift?
I think it's interesting that I almost walked back in my career, right? I had these very senior management positions in construction. I was absolutely not at IC. It was like literally just managing like huge business units. And then I decided to go to business school. So there was the first transition, right? Like being back into like a student lifestyle, and absolutely like I love Stanford. I would never be where I'm without it, but I hated being a student again. It just made no sense. It was like, where's the actual challenge? Where's the money? Like, where's the like management? So that was a hefty transition until I then started very soon after that. I was like, okay, let's like, you came here to build a business. So like, let's focus on that. And then during this company, it was actually interesting. I think the CEO, founder CEO role in a startup, I don't think you're a CEO until you have like 100 employees or something like that. Everything before that is you're a mid manager, right? Like in the beginning, you're an IC, right? If you're a founder, you buy the computer, you set up the, you know, Microsoft login, you do all these things. And the most significant, so my job here changed initially probably like every month, every quarter. And now it probably changes every like 6 to 12 months, actually, from like, what is my responsibility, right? I've seen it now, especially we've raised over $30 million so far. Now a lot of it is outside facing interviews, or, you know, like it's just now it was a marketing job, right? Before that, it was a sales job. Before it was a Teams job. It changes all the time. The biggest challenge I had in this company was when I hired my first two experienced executives, and they came in and they took over whole departments. And I, the first time I had like an hour without work. And I was so shocked. I was like, wait, like, before that, you were always behind, right? Your to-do list is forever, your calendar is full, right? 100 meetings a week. And so I brought in these two people, like, ramped up, and all of a sudden, I was an hour without anything to do in the middle of the day. And I freaked out. And I do what I do in these moments. I call mentors, right? Like, I would be nowhere without my mentors. And I call some mentors that have started companies before. And I'm like, hey, something is going wrong. I have nothing to do. Maybe the business is tanking and I don't know, right? And so like we talked through and they were like, no, your job just changed from an IC to a manager, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot because I've done this like many times before, but it just felt different. And so it was really, again, the solution here is have people that have done this before that you can ask when you freak out, and have people for different parts of your life. I have a whole like advisory board of mentors. I have, from a business perspective, I have a complete expert in HR. She was CHRO for eBay and Airbnb. And then I have like somebody who is an expert in fundraising and so on. But also in my personal life, I have somebody who understands health. I have somebody who is an expert in like how to stay married, right? It's like, I just feel like, why do you ask? Like, I would never call my doctor and ask about fundraising advice, right? And so I think people do that. And it's especially in their personal life. It's like they ask their single friends about like their marriage problems. It's like that's just doesn't work. And it's the same in your professional life.
So what did you end up doing with that extra hour? Or what do you do with it now?
All these mentors and I freaked out, right? And like they didn't. And then I realized like, hey, my baby is growing up, right? And it's and now it's going to kindergarten and other people will like teach it. And it was a great learning opportunity. And since then, I've never had an hour without work anymore. It's a different story.
So as we're moving through this interview, right now you're at more senior levels and CEO. Early on, that kind of boldness, asking, building a network, even getting mentors. But then I've heard you say, and you use this word a lot, like you became even more strategic about it. And so maybe just the point of departure is like, how do you define strategic? And then talk a little bit about what does being more strategic, doing these things mean?
I think people lack strategy. And it's painful to me because I see it. I see it in all parts of life and all parts of my personal life as well, where if you want something, if you want to go from A to B, you need to think about how do you go there? What resources do you need? What can go wrong? And how can you react when things go wrong? And like, it's just a clear focus, and focus needs strategy for execution. Like there's no, everybody can daydream and like manifest, like I'm going to manifest that, like I'm going to be a CEO. Yes, manifest it, and then also have a clear path towards execution and a strategy of how to get there and how to react to things going wrong. And I think it came probably naturally to me early on, but then I was also always really good at like watching other people and like seeing pattern recognition, right? And I remember when I started at this very big construction company, I sat down on a Saturday and I looked at all the CVs of the top management, right? And I analyzed the patterns in these CVs. I was like, okay, those people did 2 years of this, 4 years of that, and business school, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, here's your path, right? This has worked for 90% of the other people that are in this management position, so why wouldn't it work for me? And I think you can do this with lots of things, and there's so much research in the world because people actually like to document things. People just don't like to consume research. There's research about there's research about like how to have children and like make them still like you when they're like 15. There's like research of how to start a company. And so I think people are too hesitant looking at the data and at the research that other people have gone through to take examples and to take learnings for themselves. And that's what I mean with strategy.
It's part around pattern recognition. You know, in my book, I call that kind of study success. Look at what's going on. It's always, you know, go look at the top sales reps. What are they doing? What's in common? Apply that to the middle ones. And also, you are a data scientist, so look at sound research. Question for you, because there's a lot out there which is anecdotal, feel-good stuff that, you know, is clearly out there pumped out, right? Pumped out. That has no data, but it gets likes and so forth. Obviously, like you can go read journals and you can do your own pattern recognition, but how do you avoid like that anecdotal nonsense? Is there something you use?
Yeah, I'm that person. I go see where does the data come from? Who did the study? Like, how did they do the study? I actually, I only buy it when it's scientific enough. I react allergically to these kind of like fake studies or stuff that wants to be researched and is actually not. So I look very specifically, or I do it myself, right? And like with myself, it doesn't mean you need to spend hundreds of hours doing a PhD in something. It really just means for your personal life, I want to get that next promotion. Who has gotten that promotion before? How do you get a promotion in your company? Who makes the decisions? Oh, wait, let me reach out to the people who make decisions. Let me build a personal rapport with them. Let me tell them that I would like that promotion so I'm on their radar. And let me ask them as mentors, what do you need me to do to get there? Everybody can do that. Like, everybody actually wants, people actually want to help, which is also fascinating, right? That's something different, like growing up the way I did, was that was not clear that people actually like to help. So it's something that I'm fighting against my natural instinct, thinking that everybody is out there to harm me, and actually trying to like test the waters of like, maybe people want to help, and it turns out people actually want to help.
So going from point A to point B, go study point B, and then have a strategy to get there. Hope is not a strategy. It's one of my favorite sayings.
It's shoulda, woulda, coulda is the enemy of happiness, right? Like if you want to be, if you think you'll be happier in point B, then skip the shoulda, woulda, coulda, just find the strategies, study it, and like go execute.
Yeah. Now, as CEO, there is a certain kind of positional power that comes with this. Has it shifted at all how you think about influence?
It definitely has shifted, not so much because I have a position of influence within the company, more because I'm getting a bigger position of influence to the outside world. And it comes more with moving from mentee to mentor, right? Which is something that happens in everybody's career. And I see how certain people, you know, that don't even know me, like look up to me, not because of who I am, but just because of what I've done. And that actually has a certain power that I think you can use very positively for other people and for the society. And I can push certain agendas out there more easily now than obviously like 10 years ago. And that's something that I'm trying to use carefully because it can definitely go wrong. What has changed in my day to day is like I'm way more careful with the words I use internally and externally. Externally, I've always been careful, but internally, because in the beginning of a startup, you are working with your 10 best buddies, right? And like nothing really matters. Now it's an organization, right? So like if the CEO makes a dry humor joke, like people might not understand that's my weird European sarcasm, but like, you know, like everything I say has way more impact now than it did a few years ago. And the way I carry myself in the conversation has more impact, which is interesting because if you grow up blue collar in construction in Europe, you swear a lot. And so I've really tried to eliminate swearing. And that's a good example, right? Where it's just, that was really hard for me to not consistently drop the F-bomb or whatever, because that's how I grew up, right? And so it's changing in etiquette because you are a representative of other people.
Yeah. I mean, how do you put the check on yourself? I mean, obviously you can just say, hey, I'm going to stop doing those things, but is there just kind of being more thoughtful and pausing as you think about things and being intentional about it? Or is there anything else that has helped you monitor and keep yourself in check?
What has helped me is just feedback. We have a very hardcore feedback culture in the company where if I say something wrong, somebody's going to message me right afterwards, right? And so like that's happening in the whole company, and that's really good. We very actively created that feedback culture so we can all get better. And so I think it just, listen to feedback, but not to all, right? It goes back to like, don't be in my way, right? If I still decide that it's going to help me, if swearing helps me to get from A to B, which by the way, construction it does, right? Then I will keep doing that. But now what got me here doesn't get me there. Now it's getting from B to C and I need to change how I talk, right? That's a stupid example for that, but there's many others.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, it's always been a question that has driven me studying from the best, you know, drive, curiosity, hard work, team player, high integrity, that defines you. It also seems like the kind of person you really want on a high growth startup, and particularly in your culture. Really hard to find. And people can some degree, like in interviews, kind of BS you, right? How do you guys at Trunk Tools detect and select for that in an employee? Like, is there a secret sauce there, question thing that you do?
There's a few secret sauces, which I'm not going to just like publicly say right now. No, because then it ruins it for every future interview.
Right.
But one thing that I can share here is I actually personally don't have a problem with like really messed up resumes. And in a sense of like, there's no like clear like paths and stuff like that. I personally look for like how the distance they have traveled more than where they are at today. Because for me, the distance that they have traveled is the best forecast of the distance that they will travel within the organization and within a certain time frame, right? So I way rather have somebody who somehow made it out of community college and then work their way up in tech than somebody who did Harvard undergrad and had like 2 year Goldman Sachs. Nothing against that either, right? But like, it's just like, where's the fight? Where's the spirit? Where's this like, I do not care. Where's the seeing the strategy, how to get from A to B over and over again? That is a good way for me to assess if somebody has drive or not.
So we'll let you keep the other secret pieces there. I want to talk about resilience. It is clear to me from working with clients who want to advance their careers, make an impact, that they need to manage themselves, manage their energy so they can be strategic, focused, summon up what is needed in particular situations. Talk about your resilience, how that's been shaped, but how you manage yours on a day-to-day basis. What's the CEO of Trunk Tools do?
First and foremost, I think resilience is one of the very few things that is definitely not born. Resilience is built, and people underestimate how you can build resilience, right? You don't have to have my very dramatic childhood story to like become resilient, right? You can become resilient as the Goldman Sachs person that works 100 hours a week and just like hardly passes by the heart attack, right? So like resilience can mean a lot of things in a lot of different parts. And resilience for me is not just how many hours a week you work. And I think to your question of like, okay, yes, this week alone, I've been 30 hours on a plane, right? I've been in like four different countries this week. Okay, so like that's a normal week for me, right? But that doesn't mean that I don't have a life. It doesn't mean that I'm not taking care of myself, right? And so I think I love my work and I'm getting a lot of like pleasure and drive and fulfillment and gratitude. And I get lots of positive stuff out of this job, which helps me see this job as a fuel more than this as a sucker, right? And so I think if you are lucky enough to be in a position where that happens, it doesn't really matter if you work 50 hours or 80 hours or 100 hours a week, because ultimately it's not actually taking away from the battery, from the energy. On the whole work-life balance thing, I sleep and I really try to get at least 7 hours of sleep a night. I have an Oura Ring, I track everything. So like I have a huge emphasis on sleeping if I can. And that psychological work-life balance for me is way more important than physical work-life balance. And I think that's what people miss. Mm. Work-life balance or resilience or whatever, you know, funky word is in fashion right now for this, is really about do you have psychological work-life balance, not do you have time work-life balance or physical work-life balance. Mm.
Yeah, I like that, thinking about it in that dimension, the psychological versus count up your hours of where you're at.
You know, I can be in a job 20 hours a week where I hate every person that I work with and I make $300,000, right, and I'm still going to be unhappy and exhausted and burnt out. Yeah. Or it can be the job 80 hours a week where I feel I'm doing something good for the world and I like the people and I'm not burned out. Like people look at this the wrong way. It's not the amount of hours, it's the amount of psychological pressure that you put yourself under.
You have also mentioned all the mentors and this advisory, you know, specialists. You also mentioned you use a therapist regularly. Can you just share, you know, the value of that?
Oh, I have lots of therapists. No, I have absolute zero shame talking about this because I actually want the world to change.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be a life without my therapist. This is no joke. I had lots of childhood trauma. I had like eating disorder. I had depression. I had it all because of the whole abuse that I grew up with. What got me out of it was just therapy, and different things work for different people. And I'm not saying like the only thing that works in therapy, but like you need to find something that works for you. I've been in therapy nonstop since I'm 18 years old. Mm. I worked a lot to make this work. And I just think it's, again, it's this like psychological work-life balance, right? Where I have people that where I can vomit all the negative energy to, or like everything that is bothering me. And I think what people do wrong is they go to therapy when something is wrong, which, by the way, that's also how I started, because there was actually something wrong. But nowadays, I think nothing was wrong anymore. I'm in therapy preventatively and just to like keep me in check and balance of like, how can I have my psychological work-life balance? And the other thing that I just for this audience here, something that phenomenally, somebody recommended this. One of my mentors actually told me before I started this company, and they were like, hey, write a quitting contract with yourself. And I sat down, I took it seriously, and I wrote down like whatever 10 things. And I was like, hey, if 2 out of these 10 things turn out to be true, I have to stop doing this company. And most of these 10 things were around like, if I fall back in a depressive state, or if I don't have a single friend because I work $100 a week, right? Or if like my health like goes into a certain level. So I wrote a quitting contract where I can measure actual KPIs of something that before I started this company was like, I'm willing to give up all these things for a successor for this goals, but here is where I stop. And it's great because companies are a freaking roller coaster, right? And there was definitely times where I have an executive coach in this company where my executive coach was like, pull out this quitting contract and look at the quitting contract. It's only one of the 10 things that's not going right. I was like, okay, cool. I guess I keep going, right? And so it's like, just you have to measure yourself, because once you're in an extreme state, it doesn't, you can't trust yourself anymore. That's why people should do prenups. Yeah. Because once you are in the divorce and you hate everything and everybody and yourself, like that's not a good time to rationally make decisions. And so I pretty much wrote a prenup with myself for this company.
Yeah, perfect. Very, very helpful and effective. And to think about therapy as preventive. So here's to all of the therapists out there who do amazing work. Sarah, as we come to the end here, I mentioned at the beginning, right, if we were kind of the Trunk Tools app and looking down and parsing and pulling out key elements, you know, for people out there thinking about, hey, I want to navigate my career and, you know, here's the extra ingredients and things that we need to do. Is there something that the Trunk Tools app would tell us here that we didn't touch on that we should have?
I think it's like most important for people to take away. I think it's like create your personal advisor board professionally or personally, right? Like it's so much more than just a coach, like have a personal advisory board that you trust in their field of expertise. And then like psychological work-life balance, find the little things like that make you happy during the day and so on, so that you can keep going. I think psychological work-life balance is the only thing we should focus on and not anything else. And then be strategic. Like if you want to go after something, there's almost nothing that is impossible. And if you believe in that, and if you believe in yourself enough, then the only question is how do you execute to get there?
Amazing. And thank you, Sarah. Trunk Tools and LinkedIn, other ways that people can follow the company, you, your work.
No, it's like LinkedIn is just the best place to get in contact with me. It gets messy at times, so be patient. If you're actually interested in a product, just sign up trunktools.com. Or if you want to work with us, trunktools.com/careers, we are hiring a lot.
You are hiring a lot. I saw that on your job posting page. So that's amazing. A lot of opportunity there, and the rocket ship is taking off. So awesome to have Dr. Sarah Buckner, founder and CEO of Trunk Tools. Fantastic conversation. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.